Great. Thank you. And thank you very much for inviting me. I consider myself to be sharing one of the gifts that God has given me. It's been something that has taught me how loved I am more and taught me how to love God more. And so this is, it's very personal. But I did decide that the guys from the Bible Project would more ably say, sum up the doctrine of Sabbath than I would, even if I took an hour. So the first thing we're going to do is watch a 5-minute video from the Bible Project on Sabbath, which some of you may have seen, but it's worth watching again. Over to you, David, for that. Thanks.
Can I suggest that we mute if we're not?
The number seven is a big deal in the Bible.
Yeah, in biblical Hebrew, the word seven is connected to the idea of fullness or completeness.
And that's something we all long for, but don't often experience. Instead, we find ourselves working endlessly, fighting back chaos with no real rest.
Yes. Now keep all that in mind as we turn to Genesis 1 in the Bible. It begins with darkness and disorder, but then God speaks to bring about light and order so that life can flourish.
And this happens over the course of 6 days.
Each day is marked with the phrase, there was evening and there was morning. But on the seventh day, something special happens.
God stops and rests.
Right. Creation is brought to its completion on the seventh day. And that phrase, there was evening and there was morning, it doesn't appear on day seven.
It's like a day with no end.
On the seventh day, God's presence fills his creation. The land provides for all of God's creatures, including humans, who are appointed to rule the world with God forever.
Kings and queens of the seventh day rest. I can get into that.
But the humans are deceived by a dark power, and they forfeit that rest. They're exiled into the wilderness, where they have to work as slaves to the land.
Until they die and return to the dust from which they came.
But God wants to restore humanity back to that seventh day rest. So he chooses to give the family of Israel that experience of ultimate rest so they can share it with others.
But how? They're in Egypt, slaves to an oppressive empire who's grinding them into the dust.
So God confronts Egypt and he liberates the Israelites, taking them through the darkness and chaos on the way to the promised land.
Now, while they're on their way, they find themselves in the wilderness. It's easy to get lost, life is a struggle, they're not in the land of rest yet.
But while they're on the way, God invites them, in the wilderness, to start living as if they're in the promised land.
But how do you practice the future rest in the wilderness?
Well, God tells them that every seventh day, they are to stop their work, or in Hebrew, to Shabbat, so that they can rest and enjoy God's good world.
So take a whole day to live as if the ultimate rest has already come.
Yeah, this is the Sabbath, celebrated every week on the seventh day. But there's more. The Sabbath is just one of seven festivals that Israel practiced every year, each one anticipating that seventh day rest.
That is a lot of sevens.
And there's even more. Every 7 years, the Israelites were to liberate slaves, forgive debts, and let the land rest for a whole year. And then, every 7 times 7 years was the ultimate seventh day rest, called the Year of Jubilee. If anyone had lost their land or gone into debt, all was forgiven, everything restored.
Wow, so the Sabbath, these feasts, the Year of Jubilee, it's all pointing towards the hope of future rest.
Right. Now, when the Israelites went into the land, they forgot their God, and so they forfeited their chance for rest in the promised land.
They're exiled and enslaved again by an oppressive nation, led back into a world of chaos and disorder.
But Israel's prophets said that their exile would end one day, and that the ultimate jubilee of freedom and rest would come, but generations go by, and they're still waiting.
It's at this dark point in the story that Jesus appears, and he launches his public mission on a Sabbath day.
Yeah, he read aloud from the scroll of Isaiah, saying that it was time for all captives and slaves to be released, because this was the year of the Lord's favor.
What did he mean, this is the year of the Lord's favor?
He was talking about the ultimate jubilee.
Also, Jesus is claiming that seventh day rest would come through him.
Right, he said that he was the Lord of the Sabbath, and he confronted disorder and darkness in all of its forms, liberating people from sickness, sin, even from death itself.
Yet, Jesus was killed, so even his work was undone.
Well, it seemed that way. But notice, Jesus timed his death to take place at the end of the week. His body rested in a tomb during the Sabbath, and on the eighth day, he rose from the dead.
Oh wait, the eighth day? You mean the first day of a new week.
Exactly. Jesus' resurrection was like the first day of a new creation, where God's light and life broke into the darkness.
So because of the resurrection, we have hope in God's promise of future rest. But we're not there yet. It's like we're still in the wilderness, where we experience struggle and pain.
But as we journey towards that ultimate seventh day, Jesus invites us to experience a taste of real rest now, by following him. Or in his words, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest."
So, thank you, David, for playing that. I imagine some of you have seen it. And maybe for some of you, this is old news. You've cracked it. It took me quite a long time to learn to do it, and I still wouldn't say that I've cracked what I think is a gift of God for us. So, I think I want to start by just the headlines of some of what was said there. There's a promise. There's a hope, and we're called to live prophetically into the promise, the hope. And part of that for us is the promise of true rest. There's the modeling of the Father in his creation story, resting. He offers it as an example to us. He basically says the second time that the commandments are given that this is an expression of our freedom from bondage. That's one of the key things. For me, it's about embracing my limits, remembering every week that God is God and not me, that I'm not in charge, that if I stop, everything won't fall apart. My reputation may be damaged if things are not done, but that's in God's hands too. So to start with, I want to say that we do have an enemy, and I believe it is our enemy's strategy to keep us from this. He doesn't want us to rest, and that is expressed in our culture too. Our culture doesn't want us to rest, and there's a great deal in our culture that causes us to live faster and faster. I remember years ago hearing Richard Foster saying the advent of email will not save us time any more than washing machines has saved us time. We've just reorganized what we do with our time, and the expectation when we send an email is that we'll get an answer within 24 hours, where 30 years ago you'd expect to have to wait 10 days to get the answer to a letter. And so we just expect things to move faster, and we therefore expect ourselves to move faster, and it's a form of slavery. So there are four focuses that I have used, and the resources that you'll get at the end of the session attribute, this has all come from Pete Scazzaro, most of it's come from Pete Scazzaro, the emotionally healthy spirituality teaching that he brings. But the four focuses that have helped me to work out how to Sabbath have been to stop, to rest, to delight, and to contemplate. To stop from my paid and my unpaid work. In 6 days you do all your work, that's paid and unpaid. To work out what work is. When we're talking about unpaid work, many things that we do that we don't consider to be work, but they are work. To find that sacred rhythm of stopping, to work out what we do with this on the Sabbath is a big one. Social media, for me, noise and screens are a big element of my stopping. To rest, that does include sleeping, It includes napping in the day. It includes a long lie if I feel like it. It can include staying in my pajamas all day. It's whatever is restorative activity in the category of rest. Delighting has been my hardest one. Delight, it can be a translation of the word Sabbath. What brings joy? Where do you see the marks of God in your life? To contemplate his activity, to have a Godward attitude to the day. So this is, Sabbath is not about being in prayer, certainly not petitionary prayer, all day long, but finding ways of drawing closer to God. So to have a day in the week that is Godward has been my target. But I have to admit that it took me 4 years to learn how to do this. I tried to do cold turkey and just, I'm just going to have a weekly Sabbath, and I just failed miserably. And so I went reverse ferret and started all over again, and started with an hour a week where I stop, rest, delight and contemplate. I went up to 3 hours. I did an hour a week for a month. I did 3 hours a week for a month, 6 hours a week for a month, 9 hours a week for a month. When you've got to 12, because of sleep, you're more or less there. I learned that I had to try to avoid legalism. I've got a tendency to legalism. I love rigidity and rules. So I realized that I had to be very careful not to be legalistic about it, and remember Jesus in Mark 2 saying Sabbath is made for man and not man for the Sabbath. I was not trying to serve Sabbath by keeping it. And I learned that I had to make preparations. So I have to set expectations with those around me. What is and is not going to be a Sabbath activity. I have lunch with my husband on the Sabbath, but he knows that he cannot talk to me about church. No, nothing to do with my work over lunch that day. I make practical preparations. I quite often do two loads of washing on the previous day so that I don't have to do a load of washing on my Sabbath. I've got two teenagers, so there's a lot of washing. Food, someone else cooks on my Sabbath. I don't book doctor's appointments. I do book spiritual direction if that's what suits my spiritual director. I sometimes do that on my Sabbath, but I wouldn't have any other appointments. And there's been, as I say, 4 years of trial and error to work out what Sabbath looks like for me. For example, I like to garden, but there's a type of gardening that I do on my Sabbath and a type of gardening that I don't do. So the Sabbath gardening is walk out the back door, put on the gloves, pick up the secateurs and the trowel and wander around and do what catches my eye. And the minute I break out into sweat, it's time to pull back. The hacking, heavy work gardening is not done on the Sabbath. That can be done on another day. This is enjoyment, prune a rose and then sit and look at the rose and enjoy it. I've got a couple of minutes left, and I just want to tell you a little bit about why this has been so life-giving for me. I'm a very physical person. I'm all about the next right thing to do. I love to be active, but I've realised that I was enslaved. My model of ministry when I entered ministry was a workaholic. And he gave me quite a bad sense of, you've got to do your hours and then the church do their voluntary hours as well. So you do your voluntary hours as well. And there was never any theme of giving your family what they deserve, giving time to your devoted life, other than doing that at the crack of dawn. And I adopted that, really. I had emotional struggles. So I had 7 years of infertility. I did then have two children. I had a degree of postnatal depression after those. Our marriage came into a crisis point during ministry, and we've spent 6 years as missionaries in Brazil. And all of those times were absolutely crucial times of needing to have strength in God and finding that I was bereft often, that I was giving from my emptiness. I was certainly preaching when I should not have been preaching. I was involved in pastoral work when I should not have been involved in pastoral work because I was not well resourced. And so for me, Sabbath, along with my devotional life, is about having an inner life that will support my outer life. And I find ministry demanding. I don't know how demanding you all find it. I find it very demanding. And so to have an inner life that supports my outer life is, for me, do or die. If I can't do that, I'll go back to midwifery because I don't ever want to go back to the years where I was giving from my emptiness. I don't think I honoured God in it, and I don't think I honoured the church. And so for me, Sabbath is a little bit like daily devotionals. It's absolutely central to my life because it expresses who I am, my limits, and who God is. And it is a gift that has fueled me and changed my experience of God and experience of ministry hugely.
Fantastic. Well, welcome back from that time in our breakout rooms. It was a rich conversation. I hope the other breakout room was as well. So why don't we start with Jill? Is there anything kind of from your group or people who were in the room with Jill as well? Feel free to contribute. But any kind of particular highlights, particular questions that you grapple with?
Yeah. I think there's a recognition of different people doing different things, finding different ways. And I, as I said when I was doing my talk, I know myself to be quite rigid and I love a rule, really. I think I might have been quite a good Jew, really. Peter particularly says he keeps the Sabbath, but he keeps it in a graceful, flexible way, and can do that without losing the quality of the Sabbath. If he has to have a meeting, then, and I of course then admitted I've never been in sole ministry. I've always been in a team ministry, and so I've got a lot more flexibility and freedom than all of you probably have. And I think also there's a recognition of the difference in people, what they'll find life-giving. You know, I don't cook, but someone else might really enjoy cooking a meal during the Sabbath. So it's not about fixed rules. It's about finding what is restful, what is life-giving, what is Godward, rather than following someone else's way of doing things. And a recognition that it's good to make a start and prepare yourself for a long haul to get yourself into it, understanding there's an enemy and understanding that we've got strong defaults to just quickly do that. And I'll just quickly do this. The next thing the day's gone. So, I think that was, but generally a positive kind of excited response. Rather than a "this is impossible" response.
Yeah.
Anybody else want to add anything from my group or?
No, I mean that's really good. I think I think there was a recognition of the challenge of it, in the sense of both that it challenges us to take seriously a commandment, but also the challenge of actually making it happen. As well, there needs to be some kind of deliberateness about this for it to be something that is helpful and restorative and life-giving to us. We did have a really interesting question, which we didn't really grapple with that much, but you might have some thoughts, or others might have some thoughts. You might have some thoughts, Jill. Was what does Sabbath look like as a church? And not just weekly, but also in that pattern of kind of monthly or festivals wise, that kind of thing, as it was practiced by the people of God. How do we make this a reality for our churches, not just for us as ministers? I think that's a really interesting challenge. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Jill.
Well, I mean, we've been trying to teach Sabbath off and on for, no, not off and on, for a few years. We've been trying to teach it as a principle. I do recognise the challenge of living in this kind of area and the need for two salaries in a lot of households and the pressure that that puts on. But I also think there's quite a strong cultural push to give our children every opportunity. When we went to Brazil, we removed lots of opportunities from our children. Music lessons, for example. They were 6 and 7 at the time, and we were away for 6 years. And I just had to hold up that those lost opportunities to God and say, right, God, no, I feel like I'm taking something away from my children by doing this. Help me. And I think our culture gives us a really, really strong message, which borders on idolatry of children, and that if they don't get every opportunity that they want to pursue, then we're not being good parents. And so I know a lot of families who put massive pressure on themselves in addition to both having jobs that that are about serving their children with this plethora of opportunity. And I think there's a challenge there. I really think there's a challenge with churches to try to lead people into that. My children laugh at me because I talk about vacancy. I say, where's your vacancy today? Where's the space in your day that is not got any screen and it's not got any homework and it's not got any activity where you might just think, oh, I fancy doing that, and do it? And the answer is usually there isn't any vacancy in the day. And so I think, and separate to that, there's Sunday and the fact that we look to all these people to volunteer. But to me, I think that's something to do with finding what you love, rather than saying, oh, you know, it's my Sabbath and so I'm going to come to church on Sunday and sit and receive and not contribute anything. I think there's lots of things that we can do in voluntary capacity and it still be part of a Sabbath. But I think, I think there's a cultural push to fill every hour that is a much bigger problem than volunteering at church.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. There's the idea of us, of there being a deliberate teaching and discipling people into Sabbath. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's perhaps worthwhile us taking on board in terms of thinking about spiritual practices. And how we facilitate those spiritual practices amongst our congregations, and how we model them. I guess there's perhaps Tim and Pete in my group were kind of perhaps getting at as well was how do we as a whole community do Sabbath together, almost as well, you know, is there a way of us doing that? And I think that's a really interesting question to think about, is that are there ways in which we can celebrate the year, the month, the 7 years, the jubilees in our church lives, and what might that look like? Might it be stopping doing particular things as churches because we need to rest? And yes. How might that witness to our wider communities as well? What might they say to them? That'd be I think that would be really hard for for churches to grab hold of, but perhaps one that would be profitable. But
well, I was in a meeting with leaders, four people who lead a small group recently, and they were basically, they all just one at a time said they were exhausted. And once they were finished, I said, okay, let's just stop then. And they just looked at me. I said, no, let's just stop. How many months off would you want? And they decided between them they would have 3 months off. And I said, okay, you can tell your small group you're going to take 3 months off. And if they can't meet because they don't have leaders, then they can't meet. And they've done it. And they were so refreshed. They went out of the meeting sort of saying, well, we can't believe that we're kind of 3 months off leading our small group, because the COVID had just, you know, pressurized them. So I do think, you know, we've got that system, haven't we, to give our leaders after 2 terms of 3 years a Sabbath year. So why don't we systematize it into children's workers and service leaders and worship leaders and counsel them to how as to how to be Godward in their year off? That would be, I think, be great.
Yeah, yeah, you can think of all the practical implications of it, but but absolutely. So that's great. I don't know if anybody else has got any, just in the last couple of minutes, any other kind of reflections that they want to bring to the whole group, any feedback that they want to bring to the whole group.
I guess this is just a continuing the conversation you were just having, which is this, how, what does it look like for the whole community? I really liked, Jill, your phrase of what we're trying to do is live prophetically, you know, something that's coming. And again, the most powerful thing is when we do that as a whole community. And yeah, so I, that's one of my questions, was just thinking through what does, you know, what do our church rhythms mean? I think we're getting better at thinking about, for ministers, how do we do Sabbath? For individuals within our ministries, how do we set up rhythms? But what, how do we have a Sabbath and a sense of Jubilee that's visible, that, you know, almost like the rest of the world looks and goes, oh wow, what are you guys doing? I don't know the answer to that, but that's kind of the question that's sort of buzzing around my head right now.
Yes. Yeah.
We had a short spell as a family during COVID of Sabbath afternoons where we had our Sunday lunch and then we played games and played board games, and the kids loved it. But with COVID ending, so has the Sabbath afternoon ended. Got other things to do. But it's that kind of thing. It's the life-giving patterns that we can do as families that express God. Any answers gratefully received.
Yeah. So there's a sort of the working out of how we live that distinctive way, that prophetic way, both as families, as individuals, as well as whole church communities. And that's something that I think will be perhaps increasingly important for us as churches as we move into a more non-Christian, post-Christian, whatever you want to call it, kind of world, is working out the things that help us to live that distinctively Godward life. And Sabbath is going to be one of those things. And so there'll be a challenge for us as individuals, as families, as well as churches, to work out how, as Tim says, how do we live that publicly? How do we live that distinctiveness publicly? Yes. As well, so that's great. Jill, you had some resources that you were going to recommend. David's going to post those for us in the chat, so that you can just make a note of those. So do you want to just give us a quick headline of those?
Wayne Muller's Sabbath, beautiful book. You can read it, you know, a chapter per Sabbath. Beautiful resource, draws from all sorts of non-Christian sources on the idea of Sabbath, poetry and all sorts. Abram Heschel, as you'd expect, The Sabbath, beautiful read, really, really lovely read. Both of those are very accessible. And if you're more of a listener than a reader, then there are 4 podcasts in the group chat. They're all Pete Scazzaro. 2 of them from way back in 2019, where he really lays out his Sabbath teaching in its basic form, called Practicing Sabbath Delight, from July 2019. And 2 more recent ones, which are for leaders, for church leaders, Working from Our Rest and A Taste of Eternity, where he quotes Abraham Heschel, who says, if we can't enjoy Sabbath in the here and now, how do we expect to enjoy it in eternity? So, yeah, but yeah, enjoy.
Fantastic. Great. Thanks for those, Jules. The emotionally healthy resources that have been put together by Pete Scazzera and others are immensely helpful. There's the podcast as well as books. I think there are 4 books now. Is that right, Jill?
Probably... Yeah, he's just got another one out.
Okay.
Discipleship.
So there's emotionally healthy spirituality, emotionally healthy churches, emotionally healthy leaders, and discipleship as well. So, yeah, so those are really highly recommended. And there's teaching resources for your churches that can go along, that go alongside those as well, so that you can help your churches teach to work through those and your small groups, if you have those small groups as well. So that's definitely worthwhile something investigating. Jill, we're really grateful for you coming and sharing with us this month. Really appreciate your time and your preparation, as well as your insight, which is both encouraging and challenging for us, I think. It's good to be reminded of these things. And I think particularly for me today, it was that phrase that you used, developing the inner life that supports the outer life. That work that we do in the quiet places, in the deep places, is the scaffolding that helps us to be able to live our lives amongst our people, pointing them Godward and enabling them to see Jesus. So I think a really helpful time together today. It has been recorded. We'll pop that onto the SIBA website as well, so that others can catch up, as well as if we want to return to it at some point. And next month we are meeting on the 23rd of June at 12 noon for an hour, and hopefully you'll get some information how to sign up for that. I'm afraid that you've got me speaking to you in June, and we're going to be thinking about understanding ourselves, what that looks like, and to understand ourselves in ministry. So do come along. I might have something to say, and do invite others to to come along as well. And it's always good to have a bit of a crowd to bounce ideas off of. Let me pray as we go into the rest of our days.